This is full time and we are all in the game. It's kind of like a football match within a radio show. It's 90 minutes of solid football talk, and we've got a great selection of people in now. We're just going. This is what we do. We do the tricky bit here where we test the microphones as well. We love changing the lineup of this. And this afternoon, I'm joined by a man who has been on pretty much. You kind of co-presented the show last week, Paddy Boylan, as we built up the Manchester United match. Paddy Boylan from the Blue Room joins me. Rob Gutman as well from the Anfield Wrap. We're waiting on Neil Sang. Neil's watch wouldn't be the greatest. Neil, football agent, is going to join me very shortly, and we'd love to hear from you. 0151 708 1059. We are all in the game. Right, just what a crazy day of football it was yesterday. It was one of those situations where you went, in all regards, did that just happen? Forget about specifically Liverpool or Everton, but it was a brilliant day of football.
Go on, Rob.
Oh, I'd describe it as the worst day of my life. No, I mean, out of bed early on a Sunday morning thinking, yeah, it's like a second Saturday, this. We're going down there in front early on. And I was trying to wrap my brain as to when a match has unravelled that comprehensively for Liverpool. I mean, maybe the final in Europa, but actually I was going back to Leeds in about 2000 and whenever, and they beat us 4-3. That was just dreadful.
Yeah, I blame Andy Heaton from the Anfield Wrap.
Yeah, I do.
Because
he
tweeted... about 15 minutes into the game, he went, I don't want to tempt fate here, but hey, we look flipping epic today. And then two goals in 2 minutes, I went, you know, Andy, you're absolutely right. Nothing's going to go wrong here. And then
what
all of a sudden...
could possibly go wrong?
From an Everton perspective, a big day yesterday, and I don't know, it was one of those games where you went, okay, this could be a whole pile worse.
Yeah, well, it was a case of after the Lord Mayor's show, really, when you look at the Liverpool-Bournemouth game, which was so dramatic. Everton's won. Despite the fact that we really needed a result, it was kind of dull, wasn't it? to say the least. I was looking back at the game earlier, and I don't remember a clear-cut chance in the first half until Martin Stecklenburg decided to wander off his line for no apparent reason. I'm sure we'll discuss that more later in relation to both Merseyside goalkeepers who were... bit flaky.
Yeah. let me quickly touch on the Sergio Aguero situation. 4-game ban. Obviously won't miss the Liverpool match. He'll be back just in time for the Liverpool
match.
That's
nice, yeah.
That's
terrific.
Suspected. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And you have seen scuffles and you have seen times when players went toe-to-toe and nose-to-nose. But seriously, there's no attempt in any way, shape or form to play the ball. He karate kicks Luiz in the backside and he only gets a 4-game ban.
He rolled back the years, didn't he, to the golden age of Souness and people who like doing that. Before cameras were around, Sergio, now they have them. Yeah, I'm amazed. I'd seen all the stats go, yeah, he's due, he gets an automatic 3, he'll get a 4 because he's had this done, he's had 2 reds this season. But that looked a bit of one criminal intent. It should have been a short stretch.
See, I think we heard from Pep Guardiola earlier on, he was going, yes, of course, we will take everything the FA say, yes, not a problem, because he's gone. Seriously, 4-year man, we get away with this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Get in, we literally have got...
Yeah.
It could have been... That was Suarez-esque. If that was Suarez doing that, you're talking 6, you're talking 8.
Yeah, I suppose. But it's supposedly better to assassinate people with your legs and your studs than your teeth. I don't know. Well, they're all bad, but still.
I was going to mention, actually, that reputation comes into this when we're talking about the punishment itself, because if it had been Diego Costa or Luis Suarez, as you say, then we'd be looking probably at a lot more than 4 games. It was a horrendous challenge, wasn't it? And it was probably as bad as the one that Rocco got a yellow for in our game, bizarrely, because I thought that one could have probably broken Idrissa Gueye's leg if he connected.
Right, let's talk about your game while you're here. Let's strip back exactly what happened Everton Manchester United yesterday. Everything from Zlatan saying, I didn't mean to kick Seamus Coleman in the head. If I wanted to kick him in the head, I would have put him to sleep. Good to see Zlatan keeping his levels of humanity up right there where they always have been. I can't warm to him. What is it about this man?
Well, it's probably as you say, because he's got an ego the size of anything else that like nothing that compares with it, to be honest with you. He took his goal excellently. He really, really did. It was a difficult finish, even though Stecklenburg made his mind up for him. And it was a great overall display, all-round centre-forward display. Held the ball up well. His touch was excellent. And I was watching our centre forward thinking. If he could incorporate bits of this into his game, then he'd be the real deal, because I think Ibrahimovic showed him the way to go in that regard. But going back to the start of the Everton game, if you like, the logical place to begin, I felt like the team selection set the tone for the game. Before the match even started, I was looking at it and thinking, where's the creativity going to come from? Because we'd scored one goal in three games coming into it, and he decides to sacrifice Ross Barkley for Tom Cleverley. Now, you look at it and you think, okay, you're doing that to set up, be nice and solid and compact out of possession, off the ball. And then he plays Cleverley wide left, which was a failed experiment from the Roberto Martinez era. And it's certainly, when you need more creativity, that's not going to be your answer, if you like, is it? So it was really disappointing for me, because I think there are alternatives in the Everton squad that could be utilised better. I'm thinking in particular of Tom Davis, who's a cracking prospect, and he's just not getting a look in, despite the fact that Tom Cleverley's performing poorly week in, week out.
But is he not getting a chance? Because I think with Cleverley specifically, you know, nobody really knows where he plays. When he was with United, at least he had a little bit of, I suppose, identity. And first of all, can we welcome Neil Sang to the show as well? Good to see you. There you go.
How are we?
Not too bad. You're looking very well.
Thank you, mate.
Bright. And
always bright, always enthusiastic.
Yeah. What did you make of the Everton performance? Did you get to see it yesterday?
I saw the first half. I thought it was quite a frenetic game. I thought there was no real patterns of play, which is a surprise between a United and an Everton game. It was really, really like crash bang wallop for me. It just looked like a game where you could have a couple of different players involved. I mean, I know Paddy's mentioned Tom Cleverley. It's just not for me. Never has been.
Really?
It's just
there was
you know what?
When he was in the England squad, when he was at United, even that brief 6 month period.
I mean, listen, every player has that period in his career. If you're judging top international players by that, then I should be playing there, because I've had little bits of my career where, well, maybe half a training session one day where it was decent. No, but every player has that. And I think it's one of those. The measure of a player, top player, who sustains that. Tom Cleverley, I think, is... and I admire him, by the way, because he's made his career on effort and attitude. If you watch him, I say to all the kids, if you want to look at somebody who's trying, watch his face when he goes in for a tackle. He screws it up, and it means the world to him to win every tackle. But Evertonians just want a little bit more than that. They want some ability as well to go with that effort. If you haven't got that, then they're quickly going to be hacked off with you.
Rob, did you have enough energy, or indeed could you raise your head off the pillow to watch any of this game yesterday?
The Everton one.
Yeah,
I watched it on my phone. Was my sum total of my commitment. After the Liverpool one, I went into a big, deep, dark funk, and I saw United take the lead, and Zlatan scoring just compounded it. I'm very with you. The fact that I think it needs to be said, he's a terrible human being. Well, he comes across that way. That big ego act thing, it's got to have some comedy with it, you know. Even Balotelli had he quickly tired the comedy of it, but at least there was something you could warm to.
He would burn a bathroom with fireworks to at least endear you to him.
Into schools and things like that. But but Zlatan, it's just, I'm the best, deal with it. And you go, yeah, all right, mate, but you know, make sure you are all the time. And I suppose he's doing a fair job, but I'm not convinced he's walking the walk for United in a tactical sense. I think they need more energy in the front positions. Cleverley is an interesting player, I think. I mean, I remember back, I mean, he comes through under Alex Ferguson, doesn't he? And I think Liverpool had signed Jordan Henderson around a similar time, and I thought, there's not a million miles between those two stylistically, and at the level they're at, the age they're at, they're both potential England internationals. And yet you wondered, I mean, I would have put my money on Cleverley at that stage, but I think there's a chasm between
them. Well, we all would, Rob. I agree with that. Yeah.
Why has he not kicked on to that degree? Paddy, what's your views from an Everton perspective, first of all?
I just look at his overall attributes, and I think that he's a 6 out of 10 in everything, and maybe not an 8 or a 9 out of 10 in any particular attribute in the game.
You could say that with Jordan Henderson as well. But he's got hard work.
But there, Jordan Henderson's worked really, really hard at his game, and the mental aspect. I looked at the way... I think Karius had made the save at 3-3.
Really?
And
it did. I know the thing he's talking about. Did it.
He made himself really big, in fairness to him. But straight after that, Henderson was right over congratulating him, and he was really fired up for the game. And he's got that kind of fire that passion that Cleverley is missing. Everything just seems to be on an even kilter with him, and I think sometimes he needs to get a bit more roused, a bit more up for things.
Can you get that roused and up for things, Sangi, specifically if you're just coming off the bench, probably 85% of the time?
Well, what else do you do? What's your other choice? You know, and this is the thing, isn't it? The professional footballers, they understand the game. They understand the process. Processes, sometimes you'll be out. Unless you're Lukaku, unless you're Ibrahimovic, unless you're the best player, there'll be times where you're rotated. And in understanding that, your job then is to be ready in the head to play. I mean, I talked, this is an interesting one, I talked to young players about this. You know, when you're a sub, like Tom Davis is an example, when you're a sub, you'll watch a lot of the senior players on the telly and they're like, yeah, and they're talking away. Hang on a minute. There's a game going on. Your job for 90 minutes is to understand that game. And your job for 90 minutes is to listen to your gaffer and see what his instructions are. Because a game's dynamic, it goes on. So he's going to be shouting certain things. It might be a little bit different to the game plan. You've got to listen and take that in. If you're going on centre mid, you might see that the guy you're playing against taking a knock. Yeah. You might see that he's a bit weak on one side. You might see that he's a bit lazy. He's going to sleep. Your job for 90 minutes is to be ready. So Cleverley's job is to, when he gets his chance to play, is to run round and work hard, because his game is built on that. So then when he gets to start, it's imperative he gives it everything he's got, because how is he going to keep his shirt? That display, if he's dropped for the next game, I don't think Tom Cleverley, and as I said, I didn't see the second half, Paddy, I'm assuming he was as poor in the second as he was in the first. Did he get taken off for Barkley?
Yeah, not Barkley. They shifted shape a bit and they went to 4-4-2, which actually sparked the late comeback, to be honest with you. I thought it was just something different. 4-2-3-1 that we've been playing, a variation of it, just seems a bit stale to me now. It doesn't really work for Lukaku. We reverted to type almost here. It was a backs against the wall display with 1-10, aren't we? Which is hideous form, if we're being frank. And Koeman's game plan was very much to get the ball forward really early to Lukaku, and that doesn't, for me at least, when he's playing up front on his own, that doesn't suit him at all. He's not a back to goal kind of player. His touch isn't good enough for that. He wants the ball played quickly into the channels. And when Enner Valencia came on, and I'm not a huge fan of Valencia, it must be said, but when he came on, at least it gave Everton a bit of something different. And that was the one point in the game where we looked like we were going to get the equaliser, to be honest.
Yeah, so when you look at the performance last evening, how would you rate Everton? How would you rate the way in which they played? I haven't watched it. Like, I'm very similar to Rob there. I watched it from behind a pint of beer. I cried into the beer for the first 20 minutes and then finally wiped the tears and watched the tail end of it from a Liverpool perspective.
Why did you have to pay for the beer? Yeah? Is that why you were crying?
Of course not. Are you mad? Do you know who I am? I'm that guy who hosts that show on the radio. I don't pay for my beer. Thanks very much to the lads who bought the round yesterday. But I watched it and I thought Everton just didn't ever look like there was any real shape about them. I mean, you used the word shape a few times. At least, you know, teams going to play Liverpool over the last couple of weeks, and you watched Sunderland, for example, right? They may have beaten 2-0, but my word, did they have a shape. They had a flat back 8, right? And you knew exactly who was where. You know, you played the likes of Watmore, played a wee bit further up, and then you could see there could be a break here. But Everton didn't really have that yesterday. Was that because of Jose's tactical nous, or the fact that is Everton at the moment?
I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to Mourinho or anything that he did tactically. It was more a question of Koeman and the way he set them up, to be honest with you. I called his tactics after the game on Twitter in a bit of a rant, it must be said.
You ranting on Twitter? You are off. No way. My feed after an Everton match. Avoid David Downey and avoid Paddy Boylan's Twitter feed.
I describe the tactics as lazy. And what I mean is, we've got a $6 million a year manager here, and when your only tactic is to take Ross Barkley out of the team for Tom Cleverley and to bang the ball long to a lone centre forward, particularly when you're playing at home and the onus is on you to get on the ball, I think that's pretty poor. I've defended Koeman quite a lot recently, but I think there is certain elements of his decision making that leave quite a bit to be desired.
Rob, I'm giving you the Everton manager's job for 24 hours. You're not allowed to. You have to take your red hat off you completely.
No red wine.
Yeah, no, that's it. So what do you do in those 24 hours? And you have unlimited funds as well.
Jesus. Do you know what? In all seriousness, coming out, I mean, look, from a bitter red point of view, looking at that result yesterday and the fact that they get the draw late on, Connor. I think that's a really decent result for Everton, and I think it's a possible. Something had to stop the rot, and I think psychologically that'll be seen a big. And if you're making me the manager, this is the speech I'm giving anyway. I actually think this will mark a mini turning point. The Blues aren't going to have a fantastic season. I think they all know that now. But I think it can stop being the car crash it's been for the last month or two. And I think this is a big. You know, coming into this game, I previewed this for the Anfield Wrap, and I thought I've really feared for Everton because United look like they're going to give someone a hammering, and they actually gave the Hammers a hammering in the League Cup. Mm. You thought that they're going to get a performance and a result in the league game soon, and Everton look ripe for the taking here, and it could be a real bit of a humiliation at Goodison. So I thought that was a good point, and Everton have got to use that as a turning point for the season. What they do in January, if you ask me to be a manager, who they're going to spend money on, I don't know, but I think psychologically it's a big step forward.
Right, we'll talk about the tactics that Ronald Koeman used. We'll talk about what Paddy's thinking, what players they need to bring in. We'll also have a little chat in a second about the fact that could kickstart this next section of Everton season. Good bit, bad bit, maybe it's the good bit again. Right, before we do anything else though, there was a lot of goals scored in English football this week. There was five games where there was five or more goals scored by one team. Yesterday, we'll talk about that other team in a minute. Yesterday, the 4-3 with Liverpool, it was big scores in the Premier League. So let's talk about big scores or big scorers and get your thinking hats on, right? Which nine players have scored for six different Premier League clubs? Okay.
Six.
Which nine players have scored for six different Premier League clubs, right? Do you want me to give you one? You can have one.
Jermaine Defoe?
Jermaine Defoe is...
It's got to be, Jesus.
Not the right answer.
No.
Well, Defoe, you have to remember...
Peter Crouch.
Northampton, Peter
there
Crouch
you go, that's a good
is
one.
One of them, right? So you've got about 40 minutes
Robbie Keane.
To see if you can get... You've got two of them, right? You've got about
Glenn Johnson.
40 minutes. Glenn Johnson is...
Near.
Not in the list, no.
Oh, it'd be near.
So, which nine players have scored for six different Premier League clubs? You can give us a shout on Twitter, at Radio City Talk, 0151 708 1059. There's a pen and paper there for you, lads. There you go, pen, paper. You can put together this list. And
who's the first one?
Crouch. Yeah.
So you're getting Crouch.
Crouch and Keane.
And
Robbie Keane as well.
Defoe,
okay, not Defoe, okay, and not Glenn Johnson.
Anelka maybe.
Either, okay. I'm not going to share any more with you.
He's not, no.
City.
I don't think he's at six clubs.
Are they not still playing? Bolton. They can be ever.
Ever.
Oh, ever.
Well, the Premier League's only 25 years old, so. Yeah.
Bellamy.
Okay.
Done a few.
There we go. Listen, you think let me know.
We're
still on air.
Flip phones down so they're not spoiling it for everyone else. 0151 708 1059. Give us a call with yours. I would love a tweet from you as well at Radio City Talk. Which nine players have scored for six different clubs? Coming up in a second. Paddy will tell us what Everton need to do in January. We'll finish off our Everton chat. Then we'll talk about. Oh, do we really have to? Yes, we will. We'll talk about Liverpool taking on Bournemouth and how it all dramatically fell apart yesterday. And then everything from Sergio Aguero to Diego Costa and everything in between coming up very shortly on Radio City Talk.
Full time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
Radio City Talk 5:24. This is All in the Game on Full Time. I'm Connor Phillips. Joined in the studio by Paddy Boylan. By Neil Sang and by Rob Gutman. Sorry, lads, I'm a wee bit out of breath. I apologise because, look, there's no one producing. Look, he's gone.
Downey again.
I didn't even have
a big time. He's forgotten himself, that lad.
Couldn't send anyone to get a coffee. Well, not that he's ever got me a coffee, but at least, you know.
Yeah, now he's forgotten himself.
He could have hit the button. So I ran out to the vending machine there now and thought the vending machine wasn't working. And just as I was walking away from it, it says, yes, we're working again. So I had 40 seconds to make up my mind. Do I get a coffee? Or do we just get back to the studio? And I tried to do both. Got the coffee, I'm back here, but I'm supposed to present this thing now, but I can't flip and talk. Okay, so we're still working on this. Lots of goals scored in the English leagues over the weekend. Which nine players have scored for six different Premier League clubs? Right, so we're in the middle of having a little jot down here.
We've Sangi, got two.
You were thinking... You said there must be a defender in there during the break.
I thought there might be a defender. Maybe nicked one or two at six clubs.
I can tell you there is no defenders on the list in front
do
of
me. Do own goals count?
Own goals? Would they count? No, they don't count. No, not in this. Right, so who have you got so far? What are you thinking? You can read through your list.
We had Crouch and Keane initially, didn't we? Those are defos.
They're correct, yes.
Anelka we pitched. Bellamy?
Oh, I'm not going to tell you whether you're right or not.
You're
just
not.
Tell
okay.
me.
Okay, we're pitching Anelka,
that's
Bellamy.
That's scandalous, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible work. Anelka Bellamy, Kevin Phillips, you said Darren Bent, didn't you? That's a good shout. I thrown in Chris Sutton. Didn't he play for everyone for
Sutton's
a bit?
Got a chance.
And you reckon Heskey?
Kevin Davis, Heskey. Maybe someone like him. How many did he play for?
Yeah.
Kevin Davis.
Well, yeah, if we're throwing every,
Did he play for
David
a few?
Batty down. I don't think there's got to be somebody who isn't a striker.
Maybe yeah, you need midfielders as well, don't you?
It's going to be
we
going
need
back
midfielders.
I can't think of anyone.
Wingers.
Wingers,
midfielders. We'll have a little ponder on that one, Connor.
Yeah. Right.
We normally do quite well. We normally get it right every week, don't we? So
okay, let me see. You've got
we'll have a ponder.
You've gone Anelka, Bellamy, Bent. You've gone right.
They're correct.
No, no, I'm just reading through this. Chris Sutton, Heskey, Davis, Batty. Right, you've got... There's four on your list there that are correct.
Of the total list?
Four out of nine.
Excluding these,
Excluding those, so that would make it six out of nine. So you work out which one you want. Tell you what, give me your shout on this. It is at Radio City Talk. Send me a tweet now. Let me know what you're thinking. Another one coming in here for Emil Heskey from AP. No, it's not Emil Heskey. He doesn't appear on the list. So I'm letting you know he's gone. Okay. And John saying definitely not Chris Sutton. He didn't play for enough Premier League games. That's John, not me.
I believe him, actually.
Okay,
I believe him. About.
Okay, I believe him too. Right, got a couple of minutes before we head to the world of sport with Adam Phillips. I'm giving you unlimited funds, Paddy Boylan, for this Everton side, right? See, I think, to a degree, Everton kind of do have unlimited funds, right? They do have... They've probably got 100, 150 million to spend, but the problem is, and we've said it on this show, who wants to play for Everton, right? Seriously, if you've got someone there... And
that's just wounded, Paddy, that!
We just...
Oh, wounded him!
Believe me, we've got half an hour to talk about utter wounding in yesterday. So, but the question is, like, if you've got those... The second-string Barcelona players, a la Delafeu, right? If the Delafeu of now is coming through, why would he play for Everton?
Oh, it's a very good question, and you do have a point, to be honest, because if you look at where we are in the league, I think we're eighth... level with West Brom. That's the market we're operating in, isn't it, really? You don't have the draw, even if United or someone were to slip down a few places. We don't have the draw of being a big club in the way that they do, or even Liverpool as well, if I'm going to bring them in. So it's a tricky one. You're looking really at players that aren't getting a game for big clubs. So I'm immediately off the top of my head, I'm thinking Morgan Schneiderlin would be ideal. We've been linked with him recently. I think he'd be perfect.
Depay?
Not for me. Not for me. We've got enough flaky wingers.
Rooney?
Rooney I'd have because
stop trying to completely just take all the Manchester United players are there at the minute. Let's go across the leagues, across the divisions, across the world. Who do you want? Unlimited funds, Paddy.
We've been linked with
No, your choice. Unlimited funds.
Unlimited funds.
Well, you go Ronaldo, Messi, Suarez, there's Neymar.
I had enough and they'll be boyhood blues.
No, I think he means unlimited funds who've got a chance to sign for you. Should we quantify it by saying that, Connor?
Well played, young sir. Well played.
Realistically, we've been linked with Hoffenheim centre back Nicolas Sulle, who also plays for Germany. I think he's only 6'5". He's really dominating in the air, and I think we need somebody, some younger blood, to play alongside Ashley Williams. A Williams Jagielka partnership. It's aging. They're both over 30, and I think in a sense you need a bit more balance in there. So I'd be looking for a centre back. Somebody to take the weight off Barry. We're starting to see Barry tire a bit already, and I think, given his age as well, somebody like Schneiderlin to come in would be a massive help.
What do you think, Schneiderlin? 26, 27?
Around that.
He'd be a great buy,
I think he'd be perfect. I've said this.
Plus, he has played at Southampton. Did he play under Koeman?
He did. He did. So that's a potential go as well. The article I read in the Telegraph the other day touted Everton and West Brom.
Fancy.
Now we've should have more money than them, and you'd think that he'd be attracted to playing with Koeman again. The other one, slightly less realistic, I think, that I've seen in the papers recently in the gossip columns, is Virgil van Dijk, who would just be, I think he'd be unbelievable for Everton.
Well, funny enough, we may get to talk about Virgil van Dijk in a bit, because his price went up by about £35 million after Liverpool conceded the final goal of yesterday, which we're going to talk about at length in a second. Liverpool fans, how are you feeling about it? Is this just a blip, or is this the start of a bit of a decline because of the injuries? At the start of the season, we were talking about Everton having no depth. Is it the red half of Merseyside that doesn't have the depth? Right, we'll discuss this and more straight after the sport with Adam Phillips.
This is Radio City Talk Sport.
And following Everton's draw with Manchester United yesterday, Ronald Koeman said he wouldn't be drawn on whether Marcus Rojo should have been sent off yesterday. The defender made a terrible two-footed tackle on Idrissa Gueye but only got yellow. Koeman, though, said he didn't want to say too much about it.
If the referee can watch it back, maybe it will be a red card. But it's a tough decision for the referee in that situation. And then, of course, we have always discussions about if it's red or yellow.
Elsewhere, and Robbie Fowler will captain a team of Liverpool legends for a charity game against Real Madrid legends at Anfield next year. Ian Rush and Luis Garcia will be among the Reds set to face the likes of Roberto Carlos, all in the aid of the LFC Foundation. The game's due to take place on March the 25th. Sergio Aguero will be available for Manchester City when they take on Liverpool on New Year's Eve. He's been handed a four-match ban, as expected, for his horror tackle on David Luiz at the weekend. He'll miss games against Leicester, Watford, Arsenal and Hull. Pep Guardiola, though, says there's not a lot he can do about it.
It's a pity what happened in the last minute for many circumstances. And of course, we're going to accept the ban from the FA, the Football Association, and we're going to work with another players in the next games.
Meanwhile, the FA have charged both Manchester City and Chelsea for failing to control their players following the game at the weekend. The FA say Fabregas won't face any action for his part in the incident at the end of the game. Both clubs have until 6 o'clock on Thursday to appeal. Liverpool and Everton will find out who they'll face in the FA Cup third round later. The draw takes place tonight, with the matches being played in early January. The Blues are number 16 in the draw, the Reds are number 23. And former FIFA President Sepp Blatter's lost his Court of Arbitration for Sport appeal against his six-year ban. A panel found he'd broken the world governing body's ethics code over a payment he made to ex-UEFA boss Michel Platini. CAS says it amounted to an undue gift and that the sanction was not disproportionate. That's the very latest.
Full time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
Radio City Talk, 5:33. I'm Connor Phillips. You're listening to Full Time. And for 90 minutes every Monday evening, it's like a football match stuck in the middle of a radio show. We do All in the Game, and that's where we are this evening. I'm joined by football agent, general footballing expert, and the man with the best hair on radio, Neil Sang. It's very luscious. What do you do?
It's terrible, isn't it?
Is it your
No, it's a wig. Is it a wig. It's got to go.
Hoba, or do you use one of those, like... There must be a leafy extract in that somewhere.
You sound like you know what you're talking about.
I know he does, doesn't he? I should get some advice from you. Yes, product.
It's gorgeous. I think this is a bit of an ode to me. Rob Gutman's here from the Anfield Rap tonight. He decided to wear one of those sort of Irish jumpers. You know the ones, if you've ever been to Donegal in Ireland, it's up in the coast, but it's like, you do look like a sitting down Father TEDx episode.
Thank you. I was going for that look. Yeah, it was freezing. It was the only one I had that did the job, quite frankly. But
Paddy Boylan joins me as well. I have no insults for you just yet. Right, yeah. They're coming. I just thought I'd lighten the mood before we start talking about the horrific car crash that was Liverpool or Bournemouth 4, Liverpool 3. I was getting annoyed with my other half yesterday. I had to go and pick up my car because we had a drink on Saturday night, left the car there. I had to go and pick up the car. I was like, come on, just I need to get back for the match. And ended up missing the first two goals because I was picking up my car, got back, watched them again, thinking Origi's on fire, thinking Mane, this is what you need to do if Coutinho's not going to be on the side. Brilliant finish by Origi, 2-0, still pushing. You always know Bournemouth might have a goal in them, but you thought, and I agreed with Andy Heaton from the Anfield Rap who tweeted as well. He said, we're bossing this today. We look awesome today.
We did.
But what happened?
Jamie Carragher on the TV was saying Liverpool are like Borussia Dortmund, and you know, the toxic whatever kit they're wearing, toxic thunder. I thought we were fantastic. I mean, if we just watch that game back for, 75 minutes, it was one of our best away performances in a long, long time. And, it's Bournemouth. Liverpool should have expected to go there and win, but we knew if they were on their game, it would be a tough away, and they're difficult on that ground. But we started really well. It's a classy goal by Mane. We cut them to shreds, and Origi finishes superbly. 2-0, we're cruising. Even when we slacken off in the second half and they get that goal back from the penalty that Milner needlessly gives away, a superb goal again from Emre Can. You think, we're just too good now. And then they absolutely collapse. And it's all going to be written about, this is Liverpool's underbelly, the defending, the keeper. For me, that's mental, that. Mm. They hit a wall mentally. There's no reason. I was commenting on the defending throughout the game to my mate watching it with me and going, we're a good defensive side now. That's the irony. We're a good... Watch the blocks coming in. Look at the concentration. And then suddenly, it all went. And there's no reason for it to have gone. I mean, the keeper's in the line of fire here, and
he was shocking. Yeah. I know. Listen, you.
And other words at the start, like
what
that,
you
yeah.
said to me there. Now, I don't disagree with anything you said about it being a mental capitulation. But even the simple things. I was listening to. I was trying to listen to the radio as I was trying to get home, and you know, I'd heard some people saying that Karius hasn't had a touch. He's been an absolute passenger, and I was like, yeah. this is fine. Just work his way into the game. But to me, that was a negative. I would prefer that he had two or three dinted into him at one stage, and then you know, get his hands on them, build his confidence throughout the game because he's a relatively new keeper. But the decisions he made, even the stuff he came for, I haven't seen him catch a ball above his head yet.
No, that's you know, true. Not all snow.
Can we stop this nonsense and just throw Mignolet back in there and just at least let the two cornerbacks, so to speak, drift in a little bit more and give them the ball to feet to play it out? Why do we want a goalkeeper who can play it with his feet? Because he showed the other evening, sorry to keep on going.
No.
He showed the other evening in the game that he put a flipping goal kick out for a corner. Who does this?
And it's really, really strange, and it feels like a cruel joke that's being played on what is potentially a really good season for Liverpool. Mignolet has been a massive problem for the club for the last 2 years, I'd say. He's getting rehabilitated by the week by Karius's performances, and for me, that's a world gone mad. I saw Mignolet back in the week in the League Cup game against Leeds, and he did nothing wrong. I think he made one decent save, and yet, you watch the way he approaches a football. It's not just how Mignolet, the problem with how the ball is at his feet, it's the hesitancy. It's always that the defenders don't seem like they have any belief in him. But Karius has looked that in the face and thought, I can do worse. I mean, it's just, and what's scary about it is you've got Klopp and Buvac, and they're a close knit team of scouts and coaches. They know a player. We've seen the lads they've picked for us. Done a great job, and they've gone and looked at this guy, and they've gone, he's the one, and none of us have seen after 8, 9, 10 games can see what they see in him. It's absolute madness. There must be something more to this lad than we're seeing. He must be going through some sort of existential crisis that has to end any day soon. Yeah. Or Liverpool have to go into the market again, weird as it sounds.
I knew a player who played with him. I'm not going to give you any details as to clubs or where's or why's or how's. I don't want to get anyone in trouble. He was never any great shakes. He's obviously no longer at that club, but even as a youngster, he didn't stand out. And is this one of those situations where Klopp is going to stick to his guns, Sangy, where he's going to go, look, it's my man, we do it my way, just bear with it, it's still a process?
That'll be really interesting, won't it? I was at dinner yesterday evening with a German kidney doctor who's a very good friend of mine, who is passionate about his football. His son played in the same Liverpool schoolboys team as my twins, so we were having dinner last night. And he says to me in his great accent, I'm not going to do it, what's going on with Karius? And he said, exactly what you said, it'll be interesting to see if Klopp sticks with him. And he said, and do you know what's really interesting for me is, at the time they pay nearly £5 million for him, he said he's not even in the top 10 keepers in Germany. He said, I'll give you 10 keepers right now who are way better than him. And he said, that's not just my opinion. That's a broad spectrum of opinion around German football. He's nowhere near. So I was like, wow. But to go back to your question, will he, won't he? I don't know. I think Klopp is likely to say, I'll stick. Yeah. I just think it's in his nature to say, no panic. And add that belief. Even if Klopp, behind closed doors, says to his missus, he's garbage, can't believe I threw £5 million quid at him, his public speech will be, no, we're going to stick with him, we're going to see, blah, 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 blah. Because generally managers will just go, nah, done. Because it's dead easy to. Like we said about in shows gone by, Con, it's easy for the chairman to get rid of a manager. It's easy for managers because of all the money they've got. We tried him, no, bin him, let's buy another one. And when you get into that quick turnover and it's so easy to spend money, it didn't work, that's a problem for me.
I think Liverpool fans, historically, won't want to see him dropped out of the side, which this sounds strange, but because we like to give a player's chance. You don't like to see managers or goalkeepers being chopped and changed. But genuinely, this is probably Liverpool's best opportunity to win a league in 25 years, right? Mm. Surely you cannot turn around and go, right, we'll tell you what, we're not 1,000,000% sure about the goalkeeper, but everything else is grand. Do you know, am I wrong in saying that something has to be done? He's got like two games to prove himself?
Maybe not even.
Same situation with you and Stackenberg, I suppose.
You wonder what Alex Ferguson would do. I mean, you know, he was ruthless when it counted.
Taibbi, he got man of the match against Liverpool 1 week, put the ball through his legs the next, never played for Manchester United again.
Yeah, he did it with Leighton, I think, back in the early part of his reign. Yeah. And he destroyed the lad's career and confidence, but he did it for Man United for the glory, and it worked. I don't know who he goes into the market. If he goes into the market now and gets somebody else, he finishes Karius, he finishes Mignolet right there. But the club are the bigger cause. I mean, you know, Karius may be De Gea in waiting. De Gea did not look a keeper in his first season. Karius, I mean, you know, I'm hearing this reputation, he's not that great. I mean, and you wonder what they saw in him in the first place. But the lad's not making saves. That's my big problem. He does a very poor approximation of a Schmeichel once in a while, where he comes and he does a star jump in front of the defender, and you go, oh, that's a decent save. Mignolet doesn't make those. Okay, nice. But I've not seen him stop a shot. But then you look at the lad at City, Bravo. He's a Champions League winning goalkeeper, but he looks terrible to me in this league. Maybe this is the problem. It's this league and what's required.
Very quickly, Paddy, Stecklenburg, just to go back to Everton, didn't have a great day yesterday. You were given an opportunity to do something there. What do you do? Do you go back? Do you bring Robles back in? Or do you dip into the market? But like Rob said there now, that could easily end both of those goalkeepers if they go back into the market.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any room for sentimentality, to be honest.
In both clubs.
Talking about Liverpool first, Klopp clearly didn't rate Mignolet. That's why he brought in a new number one over the summer. So you have to assume Mignolet's second choice and will be for the foreseeable. If he brings in another keeper, that will be to compete with Karius. Everton's situation is slightly different because I think everyone assumed when Stecklenburg was brought in over the summer that it would be as a number two and Robles would be shipped out of the door. For me, at least, I think there needs to be a new number one in January.
Right, for both clubs?
Definitely for Everton.
Okay.
I'd have Joe Hart. There, I've said it.
There you go. He said it. Well, listen, we have to move on very quickly. Yeah. We can come back to that in a second, because we're going to take a quick break here. We are still taking your answers on a question today. Which 9 players have scored for 6 different Premier League clubs? We've got a selection here in front of us at Radio City Talk. Thanks to Michael, who said he's included Nicky Barmby in his list. And he's also said Robbie Keane. And he has also said, has he said Crouch? No, he hasn't.
Holden.
Okay, well, listen, keep going.
Full time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
It is Radio City Talk. I'm Connor Phillips, 5:47 across Merseyside, Rock Sport and Talk for Liverpool. I'm joined in the studio during this 90 minutes of footballing talk, chat, and general entertainment by Paddy Boylan, who's an Everton writer, blogger, and is often on the Blue Room here in Radio City Talk. Neil Sang, football agent and expert, some would say, and Rob Gutman from the Anfield Wrap here as well this afternoon. I may have to edit my question. So I asked you a question a couple of minutes ago, right? Which 9 players have scored for 6 different Premier League clubs? I found 10, I think.
Have you really?
I just randomly in the middle of that have found a 10th one. Let me just check. So give me yours so far.
Well, we had 4 of us. I'm going to... Should we guess that the... I think,
go on.
I think Anelka, Bellamy, Bent. You're not so sure?
Yeah, I'd say Bent.
Well, we had Anelka, Bellamy, Phillips, Bent, Kevin Davis. I think we're hoping that 4 or 5 of those are correct.
Yeah, we're back to 9. I was wrong. So we have 9. There is 9. So, okay.
And we've got 6. We've got Anelka, we think, well, Crouch and Keane are we're right. Anelka, Bellamy, Phillips, Bent, Kevin Davis, maybe Barmby.
Okay. Do you want me to give you some of the rights?
Yeah.
Right.
I'd get rid of Davis, I think.
Yeah,
Kevin Phillips, get rid of.
I think he's right.
Yeah.
Okay, get rid of Davis.
Yeah.
Get rid of Phillips.
Ooh.
Okay. How did we have 4 right then? I'm sure we had 4 right before we got...
Chris Sutton you marked off.
Yeah, somebody marked... Oh.
Get rid of Chris Sutton.
Okay, Heskey was off, wasn't
Get rid of Emil Heskey.
Batty wasn't right.
Get rid of David Batty. Okay, so what have you got at the moment?
Kevin Davis we've got rid of, have we?
He's gone.
Right, Barmby.
He is on the list.
Oh, thank God. It must have been Leeds, that last one. So we've got 6, I think. Anelka, Bellamy, we've got 6 so far.
Give me your 6.
Crouch, Keane, Anelka, Bellamy, Bent, Barmby. A lot of B's.
Crouch, yes. Keane, yes. Anelka, yes. Bellamy, yes. Bent, yes. And Barnby, yes. You're missing three.
Three to go, boys. Okay, I think we've got it in the locker, this. I think we'll get that.
I tell you, David Ginola played for a lot of teams quietly, didn't he?
Yeah, but then he had six games for Everton, didn't score.
Ill-fated spell at Everton, it was. I don't think he scored.
You've had a few lads who played a lot for a lot of teams, like Ginola, Gascoigne type lads.
Beardsley Gascoigne type. Scored.
Beardsley? No, he's probably got three.
Beardsley.
Okay, get your suggestions in 01 517 08 1059. Give us a buzz. You can drop me a tweet. Easy to get me on a tweet. Let me see. Michael. Michael is saying Bent, Barnby, Cole. I'm not going to go through too many. Some right, some wrong. Okay, so keep them coming in at 01517 08 1059, and send me a tweet as well at Radio City Talk. Right, let's dig down a little bit further into the Liverpool debacle from yesterday. Are Liverpool really missing Coutinho after one game like that? Is it really time to hit the panic button and make sure there's a purchase made in about 3.5 weeks' time?
I don't think we missed him at all, and I'm a massive fan. There's only one. I mean, you know, it's natural in these situations to go for, oh, we desperately miss so and so. And there's only one name you could pick from yesterday. I think you go, we definitely missed him. And that's Joel Matip, yeah. Having said that, I think, you know, Matip will just say, thank God that was the day I chose to be ill, because now I'm the hero. As I said earlier, there was a mental collapse there that I think even Joel Matip getting his head on a couple of balls doesn't prevent. We don't miss Philip Coutinho because I think as an attacking force, we're pretty irresistible yesterday. That's three of the best goals Liverpool have scored, you know, in a game this season.
Liverpool keeps saying this, right? This is the situation that we're in against Southampton a couple of weeks ago. Simply the best away performance of the year. And I don't disagree with you saying that there were three fabulous goals, but shut the back door. The second Bournemouth goal, there were like eight Liverpool players in the box. He flaps it. Do not depend on the goalkeeper. It creeps under Karius. Another disaster for him. He was to blame on it. I don't say
second
these things.
Fourth, I think.
Probably two out of the four are down to him. Perhaps three out of the four if you think what they're doing. So how do you close up the shop? Is it just simply a matter of bringing one player back and then he will stabilise everybody?
It might be a language thing as well, by the way.
Bournemouth were excellent, by the way. Sorry, I don't...
Yeah, Bournemouth's resilience were great, yeah.
We're not being positive about Bournemouth. They were very, very good.
It could be a culmination of things. Conor Matip didn't play, so we'll never know. But I think there's a language thing there with him, or, you know, communication benefit between him and Karius. I'm not sure Karius's English is perfect or Matip's. I wouldn't know that.
Matip's brilliant.
Is it?
Way,
okay, so Matip's brilliant. So it might be that he helps Karius along and vice versa, who knows? But I think Karius is... I think if David De Gea plays in that side, Liverpool win that game yesterday. I agree with Robert. I don't think Coutinho would have added an extra two goals for Liverpool to win 5-4. Liverpool is an attacking force, unbelievable. The other problem I had was, and I said this to my kids, we were watching it, I said, Liverpool have been that good in the first half that the worry is now, even when it went 3-1, they still go, it's too easy, this. And there is that mental collapse. Now, as a professional footballer, I've been there. You've been beating teams 5 and 6, and you go, no, come on, let's have 8. And you go, we have a win of 6-0, it's a joke.
Is that why you need a Steven Gerrard on your side?
And I think at times as well, you need somebody, whether it's a Gerrard or whether it's the manager, to just remind the lads. I mean, that's Klopp's job, is that. To remind them, listen, 3-1, 20 minutes ago, I don't care. We've seen Man United win a European Champions League with a couple of goals in the last minute. You've seen Liverpool in Istanbul. It happens, it's football. So it does need somebody to go, come on, keep your heads in the game, this is what we need to do. And it's just a little jolt, and you go, yeah. And then the people like Henderson around and about go, come on, boys, and they pull it all together. It's sometimes difficult to expect somebody on the pitch to pull that together, Connor, because they're in the throes of war, but somebody somewhere needs to do that with Liverpool.
It can be quite difficult from a Liverpool supporting perspective to not have the red-tinted glasses on, because we're still probably going to go, look, good opportunity, still up there. Paddy, from an outsider looking in, if you don't mind me calling you that, do you think Liverpool have thrown away their chance of potentially heading towards the summit towards the end of the season, or is just this a little blip? Or do you see them as proper title contenders?
I think they are title contenders, yeah. There are three teams for me that can win it. Chelsea would be the favourites, then probably Liverpool and Man City in that order. Then there's a group of teams competing for that final Champions League spot. Arsenal, Spurs, maybe Man United if they go on a bit of a run, and then it's much of a muchness. Everybody else in the division can beat.
I agree with that.
Can beat each other, and that would be quite an interesting one. Going back to Liverpool, I actually agree entirely with something Rob was saying. The only other game that Joel Matip missed, if I'm correct, was the Burnley defeat.
Yeah, he misses the first couple of games, but that's the he does miss that game. You're right.
And there must be something in this. He's now the de facto leader at centre back. Whenever I've seen him, I've been very impressed as a free transfer, as a signing over the summer. I think he's dominant in the air. He maybe is that glue that holds things together. But you can't just blame the goalkeeper or the defence. We spoke a lot as Evertonians last year about game management. That was our buzzword. And what we were saying there is because we lost an awful lot of leads, particularly around Christmas, and we were saying what you need to do is you need to keep hold of the ball in midfield. You're looking for players like your Steven Pienaars or your Adam Lallanas, your intelligent players to keep hold of it, to win fouls, and maybe that was lacking as well from Liverpool's play. There was the absence, I know, of Coutinho, but
is that because they're too attacking? We have a minute before we have to go to the news. Is that because Liverpool almost end up wanting to attack?
Yeah.
And then just somebody in the middle of the park, just to find Rose Ed, just to take a breath, because it is consistent football, lads.
I think there's a lack of ruthlessness at times. I think at times this Liverpool team have found games too easy. When they hit, and at their best, they're devastating. They found games too easy. And when they go off the boil and they stop the attacking momentum, they almost don't know what to do. And there's a couple of times they could have been found out by better teams, but Bournemouth have a special little spirit and we're there to do it. Mm. And we saw against West Brom earlier this season, we won 2-0 at Anfield. It could have been 8-0, but it ends up 2-1. And we all go home going, it's one of them. We let one in. Arsenal, we play in the first day of the season, we go 4-1 up there. It goes to 4-3. Now, because it's Arsenal, I think they're that bit more focused and that bit more, it'll never go, you realise how wrong it go. But Bournemouth, I just don't think we ever believed it could go that wrong for us. If we go on to have a good season, we'll look back on this one. I hope it's not one of those who goes, this is the one that we got found out in.
This is the Crystal Palace / Chelsea from a couple of years
ago.
Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, you know what? At the end of the day, if we are that Brendan Rodgers side, part two, it's not the worst team to be. That team was a very, very good side. It conceded a lot of goals because it attacked a lot. So let's see. The next game is vital for Liverpool. And touch wood, West Ham will oblige.
Yeah, watch them during the week. I watched them at United. They were horrific. Right. Keep your suggestions coming in for the 9 players who have scored for 6 or more Premier League sides. Is Joey Barton in there? Says
no.
John Stoddart. John, he is not.
Championship sides.
King. Michael King just sent me a message. Is Les Ferdinand in there?
That's a good shout.
Yes, he is. Stick that on your sheet. You've got 2 more to get. Coming up after 6 o'clock, we're going to discuss all the other teams. Everything from Aguero. Is this now Manchester City's title hopes taking a bit of a dunt because Aguero's going to be out for 4 games? Can they march on without him? Chelsea unstoppable once again. What can anybody do to stop Chelsea? And Crystal Palace and Swansea. Not two teams you want to be associated with just at the minute. Well, Crystal Palace, maybe. Let me know your thoughts. We'll discuss it more at length after 6.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
It is Radio City Talk, 3 minutes after 6. I'm Connor Phillips and I'm joined in the studio by a plethora of footballing experts from the Blue Room, Everton blogger, writer and a man that gets as depressed as any toffee when they lose. In fact, probably more depressed than anybody. Yeah.
It's only Dave Downey that rivals me.
Angry or is he just a frustrated?
Is it? We have to step away from Twitter if Everton are beat because Paddy will always.
Yeah.
Paddy can find a cloud from every silver
but
lining.
But is the sense in the rant or is it just like a blind rage?
No, I genuinely, you do, you're very well thought out rant. It's good rantage.
We'll have that.
Also in the building this evening, a man who's shown us good rantage in his debut performance tonight and all in the game. Rob Gutman's here from the Anfield Rap as well.
Rob's the sage, don't worry about that. He holds that Anfield Rap together, Rob, don't you?
He is.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Joel Matip of Anfield Rap.
And
of course
played out from the back.
The noisy one in the corner is of course Neil Sang, football agent and footballing expert and general king of tomfoolery on this show, as he is most Monday evenings. I'm Conor Phillips. We're here until 6:30. Incidentally, let me draw your attention to this. We're talking about Stecklenburg. We're talking about Karius. Coming up in about 24 minutes, Chris Kirkland, former Liverpool goalkeeper, will be in this very studio and he will be joined by Leon Osmond for the Legends this evening. Of course, Steve Hodges is going to be here. So if you want a good insight as to exactly what's happening with the goalkeepers, Kirkland, who's played many, many times and he's played for England as well. So he will have a little look at what he thinks is going wrong between the sticks for both clubs. So make sure you join them, the Legends, here at 6:30 this evening. Lads, let's talk about the early kickoff from the weekend. It was Manchester City against Chelsea before the game. I could not separate the two teams. For every Moses, there was a De Bruyne. For every Aguero, there was a Costa. For every Hazard, there was a selection of wingers for Manchester City.
Silva.
Yeah. Let's go for Silva. But why were they able to be separated by such a gulf in the end? 3-1, it was perhaps a result that nobody expected, gents.
I thought it was a travesty. I watched the game and I thought City were far the better team. They take the lead, a bit of a scruffy goal. It's theirs to win, and De Bruyne's the miss of many a season. Jesus, it's a terrible, terrible miss from half a yard out. You'll struggle to see a worse one. And the game's won, just as Liverpool had the game won, I suppose, against Bournemouth when the ball's virtually over the line. and then they must have gone, 4-1, and City must have thought. It was a matter of when City would put Chelsea to bed. And Chelsea get the ball drops out of the sky. Costa has Otamendi for breakfast. He takes his goal, and suddenly Chelsea believe, and they mug City. They mug them. One thing that came out of that for me, I've not been entirely as convinced as the rest of the world about Chelsea. They're relentless. They're mentally in the zone. But I think if they can have a setback or two, let's see them after that. This is maybe wishful thinking, because I know, there's a narrative that wants to go, Conte is the man, he knows what he's doing, he's got them in the zone, it won't stop. It should have stopped on Saturday morning. Maybe when things go your way often enough, that it's going to be that way forever. But I'm a cynic still on them.
Is Eden Hazard the best player in the Premier League at the minute?
He's certainly on his day. What's the word? Is it indefensible or undefendable? I don't know what the word is. You can't defend him. Yeah, that's better than it. You can't defend him. He's sensational. I think if he's a mindset player as well for me. If his mindset's right, unstoppable.
What do you think, Paddy, with regards to Manchester City? Is their title challenge going to take a bit of a wobble now? So Aguero's going to be out for 4. Yeah. Fernandinho's going to be out for 2 or 3, depending on how it's written up. Their players have all just been charged within the last couple of hours. The two clubs have been charged with the inability to control their players. This could derail Manchester City's season. 2 or 3 bad results and Chelsea keep going the way they're going, then that could be it.
It could unravel you, you're right, and the reason why is because I look at the players that they'll be missing for the next few games, and they've got some tough fixtures coming up as well. But you take Aguero out of that striking line, and you've got Iheanacho and a few others, but there's no real world-class striker apart from Aguero. So you wonder whether he's going to be able to do it regularly, Iheanacho. You can't rest your hopes on him. Certainly. And then I think Fernandinho is a massive loss in centre midfield. We've spoken about glue. We've probably done the metaphor to death. But he is the glue that holds that Man City midfield together. You've got all these really extravagant, technically gifted players like De Bruyne and Silva and stuff. But it's Fernandinho that's doing the donkey work in there, and he's a big miss.
Fernandinho stick? Anybody? No. Okay, I'll get my coat. Let's talk about what happened towards the end of the game. 93 minutes. I genuinely love Sergio Aguero as a footballer. He's in my top 5 of all time, I think. But what an absolute animal he was. I have not seen a tackle like that. And how has he only got 4 games?
Terrible. It was absolutely awful, and that's the thing. I was listening to another radio show on the way in.
What? Sorry.
Yeah, I was listening to this cricketer talking on.
It must have been a preset.
It was ridiculous, and he was saying about certain referees. Now the referees missed Rocco's one, and referees should only do certain games. But then that comes in along the lines of beliefs and biases. So if you're a referee and you look at Diego Costa, and all you do is the Premier League, and all you're looking at Costa and you're already going, well, he's going to get sent off for this and that and the other. And my thing was, when I was listening to him, they're missing the likes of an Aguero. Yeah. So if you're just going on that bias, Sergio Aguero doesn't get sent off because he never does anything wrong. It was just a complete head loss. It was just ridiculous for him to do that. And I don't know whether there was, in the back of my brain somewhere, at the start of the season, Guardiola was maybe rumoured to not be quite having Aguero. Am I right in that?
No, he dropped him, didn't he, against Barca in the first
Dropped
leg,
and was it? Saying, well, you know, if he doesn't, he can go, whatever. I mean, what's Guardiola thinking? And I don't know whether that's a little bit of something in there from those little times or those comments, I don't know, but it's certainly not like him. And you just wonder whether there's something bubbling in the background with Aguero to maybe try and engineer a move. I don't know.
Does Diego Costa get a 4-game ban? Had he have done that yesterday? Or
no more. Deserve... This is what I'm saying about beliefs and biases. Yeah. Connie, you're spot on. If it was a Diego Costa, it's 10, 12 games. If it was a Luis Suarez, it's banned for life. If it's somebody, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just judge it on its merits. That's why I disagree completely with the other radio show. You've got to go on each individual case on its merits. Rocco should be a retrospective red, in my opinion, if you can still do that. And Sergio Aguero should be 8, 10, 12 games, because that could have ended, Luis.
15:48 a.m. Sangy, just in case you're wondering what radio station 100%. You're on. Make sure you get it on.
Well, no, I came to that after the trot that they were talking before.
Thank you, appreciate that. Eventually, Crystal Palace, a bit of respite for Ellen Pardew, as Bob Bradley calls him. Ellen Pardew. he got his 3-0 win over Southampton. He stopped the rot. He was never been beaten 7 games in the row. He's been beaten 6 games in the row as a manager, but never 7. Stopped the rot over the weekend. Crystal Palace, is that, are they going to stabilise a bit now? Because they do have some decent players in there, and you feel that if they do get a little bit of a head of steam, they can get out of trouble, but can just as easily get sucked right down into it.
Yeah, I think if you compare them to some of the other teams around them, they should have enough to pull clear. I was baffled by the vulnerability from set pieces, because that's been something that I've always associated Palace with, that kind of strength in the air. If you look at Scott Dan and Delaney, that those two are towering presences. So for them to concede so many goals from set pieces in the air, I found it really bizarre. Benteke was the missing piece of the jigsaw, I felt, when I saw them bring him in. They get loads across into the box with Zaha and Townsend, and they were missing last season somebody like Benteke to get on the end of them. So I actually think that if you look at them man for man, they're probably a mid-table side and should pull clear the likes of Swansea and such.
They do look a touch above. I mean, they're capable of being dreadful, as Pardew teams can be. Yeah. But if it goes well for them, you can see how the story gets written, can't you? As you said, you can see all of the Zahais, he's getting better by the season. Townsend's being underrated and just needed his new thing. And then there's Benteke, the perfect foil. He's starting to score goals. Mm. And they've got Kabaye in that side. And they've got two centre-halves who are, you know, on paper, they could make a claim for being best of the rest, couldn't they? But this is the first time they've shown it. But you'd think they'd probably turn a bit of a corner. I don't know what their fixtures are like. They need them to be a bit kind.
Stoke 2, Burnley 0. I sound like a broken record on here every week because of it. 3 or 4 weeks past, but 5 or 6 weeks ago, we sat in this very studio and Sangi went on a rant, and it was a brilliant rant. He was just saying, listen, what is the situation? Why are the papers picking at Mark Hughes? Mark Hughes is not going to lose his job. He will settle things down. He will make sure it all works. 9 games in the bounce now without being defeated. I think it's been 9 games since your rant.
There you go.
And the Stoke...
I still haven't had a telex off Hughes or a text or anything.
Not even a thank you.
No note by pigeon, nothing from him.
And the Stoke boss says... Stoke chairman came out that week and said, listen, would you settle your heads? He's not going anywhere. We will get sorted. Outside of Liverpool, Chelsea, and I think Arsenal, they have the 4 best record in the last 10 games in the Premier League. They could be more than the best of the rest. What do you think, lads?
They got a chance. I mean, it's one of those clubs that certainly turned around. You consider Stoke now as a perennial Premier League side, don't you? And I think if we were all asked the question for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, would Stoke be in the Premier League at the end of the season? I think we'd all say, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think we could say the same for the likes of a Sunderland or maybe even to some degree a West Ham. Mm. But I think with the Stoke, you always go, yeah, they'll be okay.
It's felt like there's money at that club for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Quietly, they're big spenders.
Yeah.
So they pay very well, too.
Yeah.
So wages for the players are supposed to be exceptional.
Yeah, you feel there's something in at Stoke which is establishing them as a top-flight club for a long time to club. I mean, for a long time to come. I mean, from an Everton point of view, you go, we've got to keep a level above that in what we're spending, because you can see how that spending's keeping Stoke at a top-eight club. OK, they've had a terrible start, but they've pulled it around.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't want Everton to get sort of caught up by or even overtook, dare I say it, from the likes of a Stoke or even a West Ham or a West Brom. Yeah, a Palace, a Southampton. You don't want that to happen. Everton have got to really focus on that. Have you got to stay above that sort of next crop of clubs, Connor?
Crystal Palace 3, Southampton 0, Stoke 2, Burnley 0. This is the one that really captured my eye when I was actually doing the show here on Saturday. Game on, every goal as it went in, and it really shocked me and surprised me. Sunderland 2, Leicester City 1. Now, Leicester City, again, for the second time this season, third time perhaps, more goals or more points in the Champions League than in the league. Jimmy Vardy's not running as many yards. The facts say they're not closing down, and they're not pressing like they were. Also, this two up front isn't making any sense if you just look at the stats. How can something change so quickly? Is it all down to Steve Walsh going to Everton or the backroom staff being shuffled around? And it's dangerous territory for Leicester now.
It is dangerous. I said at the start of the season, Connor, they'll be lucky to stay up, and everyone will be like, what are you talking about? For the simple reason is they put a Herculean effort in to win that Premier League, and everybody in the Premier League last season were like, nah, they won't do us on the break. Nah, it's Leicester, you know, they'll crumble. No, they kept going and going and going. This season, it's a totally different mindset when you approach Leicester. You say, we'll stop them doing this. We'll play a little bit deeper at the back. We stop Vardy getting over the top. We stop Okazaki getting on the ball. It's not hard to nullify them. Their best player in Kante is now gone. They're majorly hindered by that. So it becomes easy. That's why I said, trust me, Leicester will struggle to stay up.
Is that why they're doing okay in Europe? Because we kind of have them found out in the Premier League. We know what they're going to do. Is that why the European clubs, and they had a simple enough group as well, is that why they're rolling on in Europe?
Yeah, I think actually if you look at the group, and there's Porto, Club Bruges and one other that escaped me, that's a group that you'd be quite happy with if you're in the Europa League, isn't it?
Definitely.
That's a very, very good group to get in the Europa League, so I wouldn't actually read too much into the form in the Champions League, to be honest with you. Sangi made a really good point there. He mentioned N'Golo Kante and the absence of him. For me, that means that they can't play the same system this year, because the 4-4-2 was very dependent on Conte effectively doing the work of two.
So Musa hasn't replaced him positionally or as a player?
He's looked Ranieri to bring in other players. They signed Mendy from, I think it was Nice in Ligue 1, and he just hasn't had the same desired impact, and that's simply because there aren't many players around like N'Golo Kante. I think we've probably got the only like-for-like if you look at Idrissa Gueye. But again, a case of after the Lord Mayor's show, I agree with Sangi again.
So I'm looking at the Leicester setup, but the simple facts are Vardy isn't running as many yards. They aren't closing players down. These are stats that I looked at throughout the weekend. You can look at how players and how teams are playing against you. But personally, the likes of Vardy just has to put his head down and work a little bit harder, because this is the test now. Well, why aren't they doing that?
Well, they probably weren't doing it the year before last year either. Yeah. This is their norm. This is every now in football. I mean, let's take a step back. It's the most remarkable sporting achievement, virtually in any sport. Yeah.
You can maybe even isn't it?
Because of what they had to do over such a sustained period, it goes beyond the sporting shock. It's crazy, really. And if you think what has to happen for that to happen, their minds have to get... So many planets have to align, almost.
It was a perfect storm, wasn't it?
Yes, and it has to keep... And almost... And I think teams like this that do overachieve, they then get an identity crisis after the event. Mm. I mean, I'm thinking back to my youth, and Aston Villa win the league when they shouldn't have won the league from nowhere in 1981. Leeds team... None of these teams were as bad as the Leicester team that won the league. Leeds team in 92 go and win the league.
Blackburn.
And if you look at the season... But maybe less so with Blackburn. Certainly the other two cases, the season they have afterwards is always awful. Mm. I mean, even the Liverpool team that nearly wins the league 2 years ago is then... I mean, there's a lot of mitigating circumstances to lose Suarez, but still, it's gone. It's as though, I don't know, the weight of that is just too much to take. You can see why the Champions League, notwithstanding Paddy's a very good point, it's a rubbish group, but still, they're focused. Those are the sort of teams that could beat Leicester if they were Premier League teams. They can focus on that. They know what they want to do. They're single-minded. Now they don't know what they want to do. They know they can't win, repeat that trick because of the Herculean effort sign you talked about. It's not going to happen again. So what do they want to be? Do they want to be top four? God, even that's a stretch. What do they want to be? Top six? Top seven? They don't know who they want to be.
Where do they finish?
Lower mid-table, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think they've still got a win in them. That's why they won't go down.
I think they stay up.
I'm going to go with the going down.
I think they stay up just...
I think they're going to go down. Anyway, I suppose time will tell on that one. This is a big one for two different teams. We all wrote Spurs off last week. Everybody wrote Spurs off. They went, look, didn't buy enough quality players, not a good enough side, out of the Champions League, playing at Wembley. They're going to have to play that stupid Thursday night football in the Europa League. Mm. And then they go and beat Swansea 5-0. Is this because Spurs are still a definite top six, perhaps top four side? Or is it because Swansea are absolutely abysmal defending since they lost Ashley Williams?
A bit of both. Spurs are definitely a top four, top five outfit, and Swansea have been pretty poor with the exception of the Everton game, where again, we were terrible ourselves. The big thing for Spurs, of course, is getting back the focal point up front. Harry Kane he's been immense for them. I think I saw a stat earlier on Twitter, 50 goals and 70. Premier League games in his last 70 Premier League games. That's way higher than 1 in 2, which I usually use as a benchmark.
A good striker.
That's what Lukaku's record is at Everton, and I'm more than happy with his goal scoring. Well, the goal scoring element of his play. So Kane's back. They'd really missed him, and more than anything, look, they've got a great young manager in Mauricio Pochettino. They came close to winning the league last year, and both for a slight mental defect, and B, the fact that the high energy system is so demanding that towards the end of the season players drop off the pace. And I think this will happen to a lesser extent with Liverpool, because I see similarities between Klopp and Pochettino. Spurs are more than good enough to compete with Arsenal and a few others for third, fourth in the table.
Are they not title
not for me
winning territory?
I don't think so. No. I think they are decent. I think Paddy's absolutely right. I think they get written off a bit too quickly. I think he'll stabilise the ship now. And they pick up points when people don't notice them picking up points. I have to say, they are one of those teams that seem to pick up points when they're not playing terribly well.
Yeah.
I would compare today to someone like Liverpool or even Arsenal. We don't tend to get points when we play badly. We have, people take us. But Spurs seem to have that knack. I think this 5-0 is hard to read into it because Swansea are really on the ropes at the moment.
Are they for the trapdoor?
It looks that way. I think, have Spurs got United this weekend? Am I right in saying? I think they have.
On Sunday. Yeah.
Now, you see, that's a game neither of them needed just at this stage. And if one wins, they push on. The other one loses. I think for United, lose, even a draw, is a bit of a disaster.
Not for anybody in this room, though. Everybody in this room is going, draw, do rightly. Love that. Yeah. Let's see, West Bromwich Albion 3, Watford 1. We can talk about this very quickly. I like that West Brom are scoring goals. I like that they're up there. I like that Tony Pulis is sort of going, in your face, doubters, in all of your faces. It's been good this year. I kind of like watching them.
Long ball. You like that?
But this is football. You want to be entertained. Yes, I watched Liverpool entertain me for a batch of yesterday. They got beat 4-3. But there's something about Tony Pulis just literally putting two fingers up to the system going, nah, I'm going to do it my way. And he did. And he's got, 8 goals in 3 games have scored now.
Yeah, no, you know what? Behind whatever narrative is out there about Tony Pulis, you've got to sort of have a private admiration for him. You might not lord it out loud, but you've got to have a little bit of a fair play. Yeah. But I think he's that type of manager, and there are roles for managers like him that have 2 or 3 years at a club. They'll establish it, they'll maybe even kick it on, they'll acquire loads more money because of decent finishes in the Premier League, and then he moves on, he does it somewhere else. So he's created almost a niche, if you like, for himself as a manager, and he'll never be out of work. If West Brom and him suddenly, whether it's mutually or what, suddenly part ways, Tony Pulis will get a job straight away. Yes. So you sort of admire him for that in a really unstable job.
let's not talk
job.
About Tony Pulis leaving clubs and exactly what happens after that, because he's had an interesting week. His pocket's considerably lighter if you look at some of the headlines. I do feel for him after what happened with Crystal Palace. Right, very quickly, West Ham 1, Arsenal 5. Liverpool taking on West Ham in the next couple of days. West Ham side, I watched that at Old Trafford, as I said, they were absolutely abysmal. As soon as Cresswell went off, that whole right side, in fact, the whole left side, because they don't know what to do at the middle of the park, it's just crumbled, and United just picked them apart. Arsenal did it at West Ham as well over the weekend. They like we were talking about a minute ago, they could be trapdoor fodder, and are Arsenal just going to stay and be Arsenal and finish in fourth? We've got 1 minute on this.
Arsenal are having that moment in the season where you go, oh, I can see them, this can being different this year. But the only thing you have to say is it never is. You know, it just never is different. If I was an Arsenal fan, I would be trying to talk myself into it, but it's never different, Arsenal. It just is always... West Ham, you'd have to be worried. I mean, you'd think they'd like Palace, get a good win, they maybe turn around. They surely can beat teams. They've got Payet, they've got Antonio, they're one or two lads. Big Kaz back in the side gets a goal. You'd think they should stay above the trapdoor, but you'd worry for them.
Yeah, I agree with that. They've got 38 away games, Connor.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at it at the start of the season, because that stadium's a nightmare.
But using the same stat, I had a quick look. It is 2 weeks ago since I had a look at this. Their form at home is almost identical to what their form was like when they played at Upton Park last season. They're not dropping many more points.
Surprised me that.
That is about 2 weeks ago, maybe 10 days ago I looked at that. So it's not too dissimilar. What did they need to do, Paddy, just to get back in and just go a step up and try and stabilise this?
I see echoes of Martinez in Bilic, and I say that because he had a relatively good first season.
I love Dave does it as well. Every time there's a bad manager. Yeah, Martinez, exactly the same. Exactly the same.
Anytime there's a team that doesn't know how to defend, then you can, I suppose, blame Roberto or make a comparison.
If in doubt, blame Roberto.
With Roberto, but they seem really insecure defensively. And going back to Arsenal, they look great for a certain part of the season, usually around now. And you do, as Rob said, believe they'll be title contenders. But Alexis Sanchez, if he gets injured, that for me is the title hoped over.
Right, we're almost ready to look through that window. Look at that. The three best-looking men in football out there. Leon Osman, Chris Kirkland, and Steve Hollisall, I think he's called, is going to be hosting the show in about a minute's time. Right, let's just get this done. Which 9 players have scored for 6 different Premier League clubs? Who have you got?
Crouch,
1,
Keane.
2.
Anelka, Bellamy.
4.
Bent.
5.
Bambi.
6.
Les Ferdinand.
7.
Andy Cole.
8.
And we haven't got a clue.
Right, you have said it.
Marcus Bent.
So you're saying
Darren Bent. Let's just go with him.
And Marcus Bent.
And their kid.
Just, if in doubt, always listen to Sangi. Bang on. That is the 9,
Marcus
lads.
Bent. Go
the
on. Well, it was a gunman shout. I'm just getting it
over
the line.
Credit here. Yeah, he knocked it in.
You know what? When we were playing the ads and stuff there and traffic and travel and during the sport, you were literally saying Marcus Bent every 15 seconds. I had to bite my lip going, yes, it is. So, Paul Ferdinand, Bent, Barnby, Bellamy, the other Bent, Crouch, Keane and Anelka. For me, Connor Phillips, have a wonderful night. The legends are next. Lads, thank you very much for everything.